gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant. Or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Today on the podcast, he needs no introduction, Drew Tate joins us. So nice of him to give us his time on episode 200. The man responsible for the most memorable play in Hawkeye football history, and actually my first memory of Hawkeye football, period. This one is a good one. You're going to want to sit back and relax. You know what it is. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash of Walk-Ons fans, episode 200 of the podcast, and today is a pretty cool one for all of us. I can remember as a young 9, 10-year-old kid, I looked up to college football players like they were superheroes. I didn't think that it was even possible to get to the level of playing on TV in front of tens of thousands of people, but the guys I saw on TV, like, they were actually mythical to me. And I can remember being in a friend's house surrounded by other Iowa fans when one of the most legendary plays in Iowa history happened, the catch for Iowa history Drew Tate to Warren Holiday. And it is actually an honor to get to sit down with Drew and talk Iowa football and just shoot the shit with a guy who I consider one of the absolute legends. So, Drew, welcome to the podcast. And we aren't really worthy because we're garbage, but thank you for joining us.
Well, hell, that was a hell of an intro. But mythical, like, hey, man, just like you, I need more cowbell. Put my pants on, you know, one leg at a time, right? There you go.
When I was 10 years old, I did not think of it that way, man.
Oh, hell. Yeah. You're right. At 10 years old, you think of them as mythical creatures. Like, felt the same exact way.
I was fairly certain as well that when I was 10 that that you had people put your pants on for you, essentially. It was something like that.
Hey, some nights and mornings, yeah, that actually happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, Coach Ferentz even tied my cleats for me in my senior year. It was insane. It's pretty cool.
Whoa, we gotta hear that story. Why is KF tying your shoes?
Oh man, well, I had a broken hand basically, and so I couldn't do anything. I had basically one hand, so you know, to loop, swoop, and pull, you gotta have two fucking hands, and I only have one. So that's where that came about.
Why is the head man doing it? Why didn't you get the like fourth string quarterback to do it for you?
I guess he just felt like doing it that day. I don't know. One day of practice, and that's down those old grass fields, I believe, where the new facility is now.
Sure.
Shit. Did y'all practice on those old fields?
Did we get any of the old fields, or was the actual new facility built before then?
I think the grass field is always in the same spot it's always been.
Okay. Yeah.
And so they're still there?
Nah, they replaced it with turf because the grass got all tore up all the time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's what I thought. I thought it was turf or something now, or the building or whatever now, the facility.
Yeah, when we were there, they were trying to replace the grass every couple of weeks because it was getting so tore up. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the winter and shit, like, you might as well turf that shit. Like, just do what the stadium is. Make it simple.
Yeah, and it made it easier on us, too, because by that time, most of the fields were turf, so it's like everyone's playing on the same surface.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Drew, what do you I'm sure it's the one thing that people say about, you know, they bring it up. It's like, dude, oh, you were that guy. Like, what was it like that day? And I want to ask a question that isn't that cliche, right? Because I have one play that I'm also known for. I caught a play. I was a long snapper. You probably have no idea who I am. I was a long snapper and caught a pass against Ohio State and tripped on the 1 yard line. So when people bring up my playing career, that's the only thing that gets talked about, right? Right. And the laughter is completely warranted. I love it. So I'm sure when people bring up your career, it's like, oh, what was it like?
Same laugh.
Yeah, yeah. What comes to mind when you think of that day and that play specifically?
With Warren Holloway?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, see, look, I'm from Houston, like especially east side of Houston. So it's basically there's a lot of Tigers, and even that live in this part of the state. And then, you know, because we're only about like 4 hours from Baton Rouge. So I just love the fact that we were playing LSU. So that was a big deal. Like, I was playing a lot of people from back home that I grew up with, right? Like, and so that was just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to come down and whoop off on y'all's Tigers' ass and shit like that, right? And so – but yeah, to me, it was just being able to play LSU, at the Orange Bowl, or not the Orange Bowl, the, Citrus Bowl or whatever it is.
Capital One.
I mean, you know, I mean, so just that opportunity was really cool. And then, yeah, being able to like do it that way. I mean, the game was kind of like the year for us. So it was, you know, cause you're there for a week, you know how it is. And then you do all this shit for a week and then you play the game and, you know, it's usually during like Christmas and New Year's. I mean, that's how it was for us. Like that, you know, we were blessed to be in that time period, you know, if you know what I mean? Like, so, but that was like the norm. Right. And so, yeah, man. And you know how that season was, and you probably heard about it and saw, you know, we started 2-2 and then took off, lost all these damn running backs. We had no experience on offense, blah, 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 you know, that shit, right? But you know how it is, right? And as soon as, like, October hits, you usually start kind of catching your ride, you know, catching that wave, right? You're hitting it just at the right time. Everyone, you've been doing it now for a couple months, like, you know, the drill, the routine, boom. Now, like, the work starts taking over and, you know, and the routine and shit. And then also the mindset, you know how that is, and especially with the strength conditioning and how it was. And I mean, damn, you can go on and on about that shit. But the game was the same way the season was. You know, it started off, you know, pretty shitty. Yeah, it started off okay and then shitty. And then, you know, you just got to prevail, right? And we had such a good team. It wasn't just offensively, but special teams and defense that year. And really, our special teams was really good. So that helped us. And then our defense obviously helped us. You know, and offensively, it's just kind of like, oh, they made that play to keep the drive going. Oh, they made that play to – or they scored that touchdown to keep the game going. It's just typical Iowa fashion. You know, the good guys, they just kind of go out and find a way.
Yes, sir.
Pretty simple.
I love it. Was there – you know, you get it to midfield there. Was there ever a thought of – I don't know if you guys even had timeouts. Like, did timeout enter the brain of Drew Tate, or was it just like – fuck it, we're going for it. Like, because that's kind of what it looked like.
Yeah, it's exactly what it looked like. But no, hell, I thought we had two timeouts left. If the coach, man, hey, it wasn't me. I got my ass ripped one time because I called timeout, and they said no one calls timeout except, you know, the head coach and stuff like that. So I was like, well, shit, all right, I'm not calling another timeout, you know, like, so. Right. You know how that is. Yep. I mean, but there was confusion, you know, I mean, with the penalty and stuff like that. So I just remember when we were breaking the huddle, the ref started saying, hey, clock's running. So you're like, well, fuck this last play. And it was like the all vertical play anyways. So it was like, well, there's nothing else we can do. So I didn't think about calling it, you know, so that made sense to me. So I already had that in, like, one side of the brain, like, don't call timeout. And then the other side, I'm thinking, well, shit, the clock's running. Like, we already have the play called. Set Hutt. Right. You know?
Set Hutt.
That, hey, Set Hutt led to one of the most legendary moments in my life because it's burned into my memory. Like, that was a celebration that was truly, like, life-altering.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, and that's so cool. That's cool to hear. It's great to hear people talk about that play, you know, Iowans and Hawks and all that. You know, oh, man, I was doing this, I was doing this, I was doing this. And I'm thinking, like, damn, like, y'all – like, how are y'all not just waking up? Like, it's New Year's, you know? Like, it's like at 3 o'clock on January 1st. Like, shit, if I wasn't doing this football stuff, I'd just be waking up probably around then. Like, it's crazy. Y'all caught the game. Like, but you know how, you know, like, it's cool. You know, some people say, like, man, I dropped my baby. I, you know, hit the beers out of my wife's hand or whatever, you know? Like, you just, the stories are great. It's really cool. And then, yeah, you guys, especially, y'all are a lot younger. So, that, yeah, that makes sense.
It's how hard did you that. Party afterwards?
Well, I tried to, but so my whole my all my family was there, like from Texas and Alabama, and so we were trying to do this, but then Coach O'Keefe told my dad that like I needed to get out of town, so we packed up the car. My dad said, "Okay, Coach," and so we packed up the car and fucking started heading west on I-10.
No!
Like. Yeah, man. That's how that went.
Hopefully Warren partied hard enough for both of you.
Yeah, I'm sure he's still doing it. And that's the thing, guys. Like,
there's some beers being passed out to players on the field from some fans.
Oh, you probably. Yeah, because you know how Iowa fans travel in bowl games, and then for that thing, right? Like, but man, and y'all know like Warren, and I don't know. I mean, I'm sure y'all have heard, but like Warren was a fifth year senior. Never scored a touchdown in his career, yeah. You know? Like, just that in itself is pretty crazy.
The story is
so
wild.
Yeah, mind, the story, yeah.
What's going through your mind where you say Set Hutt, and then you're like, oh, shit, they forgot to guard this dude. He just running down the middle of the field.
Yeah, well, fuck him. Put it on him. Like, and then, but as soon as I threw it, I thought I'd overthrown him. And then while the fucking ball's in the air, I'm looking at him, I'm looking at the ball, and then I'm looking outside, like, and Hinkle's fighting off the corner from folding in on him. And so I was just like, oh, man, this guy's just going to – he's just going to, like, just fold in and probably jump up and pick it or something like that if it's not overthrown. And somehow, yeah, it just fell right in. Warren, you know, Hinks throws that block on him. And he does his thing. And that's the crazy part. That's Warren Holloway. Like, the dude just, you know – like, are you kidding me? And then that's how he gets to write his script. Like, super dope.
You mentioned Hinkle. It seemed like, you know, not that I watched all those games in depth. Again, we were in, fourth grade. But what was it like to have Hinkle as a receiver? It seemed like he was just money. Like, he had to give you a sense of security as a quarterback.
Yeah, that's what he was. He was money. He was steady Eddie, right? Yep. I mean, you can always count on him, you know, like, you know, and as you keep playing, you keep evolving around people like Hinkle, you know, you call him 7-Eleven, you call him Waffle House, because they always are open. They always find a way, right? Like, they, you know, they run good routes, they play with their eyes, they know the game. But Hinkle played quarterback in high school, so, you know, so when you take that kind of, you know, talent, you know, now he sees it. Now, you know, now I'm running routes. Okay, well, I know what it was like as a quarterback. I know what I liked and what I would want on this and what I'd want on that. And then we were roommates, too, so it actually helped. So,
oh, wow.
You know, we were roommates over at the Ridge, you know, before they that whole thing went kiboshed.
Like, Ridge? You guys
–
the
Pheasant Ridge, man, because that was the great part about it was – and they ended up doing – they had, like, you know – whatever it was called back then, 60 minutes on sports or some shit. And they had a deal that like all the players were living rent free and stuff because scholarships didn't count as income. So like back in the good old days there in Iowa, yeah, like the players never had to pay like rent basically. Actually, to tell you the truth, hell, I'd get a $5 check every month slid underneath my door for renting from there.
Wow. We love it. That's incredible. So I was going to ask, like, if you guys stayed in Hillcrest or not, your freshman year,
Yeah, I stayed there my freshman year, but they said that, you know, you got to stay in the dorm 2 years. I'm like, are you shitting me? Like, there is no fucking way I'm staying
in the
dorm for 2 years. I liked it my freshman year, but then my second year I was starting, and like, I'm like, dude, there's no way I'm staying here. Like, because, you know, at the dorm, you don't ever go to bed until about 3 a.m. Like, and I'm like, no, I got to get my sleep. Like, no, because I got to get up and go to these fucking meetings and workouts and shit, you know. And I'm like, there's no way I can go in there sleeping 3 hours. Like, I'm playing now. I mean, you know how it is. Like,
I do. So you played quarterback in Texas high school, and then you played in the Big Ten. Do you think Texas high school is the best high school football? Because I've had coaches say it's in Georgia or maybe in Florida, but what do you think?
Okay, well, and that's a very broad question, but I'll tell you this. Especially Georgia, Florida, Texas, even Jersey, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio, even Iowa, California, there's good talent everywhere. I don't give a shit where you live, or every corner of this country produces talent, okay? Now, in my opinion, when it comes to structured organization, financial backing, like, yeah, like, it makes, like, Texas is, like, to me, head above heels, like, and, like, how it is, like, and even as a college coach, like, when you go and recruit, like, you go to Texas, like, you go in and you talk to the coach and you talk to the counselor, boom, you get everything you need to know on these kids, like, these other, you know, because these coaches in Texas are also teachers, so they're mandatory to be on campus all day long, like, that's their job, right? I mean, if you're a head coach, you're just like campus, you know, coordinator, you know, you know, whatever. So, but these college coaches, when they go into recruit, they can always go into the field house. The head coach is supposed to be there. Like, that's like his station, like in the military kind of thing. Like, could you imagine going into the fucking weight room and Chris Doyle's not in the fucking head strength and conditioning chair? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it's like. So it's just like how it's run, and it's like a factory there. And so to me, like from head to toe, and then the pay, the living, the retirement, yeah, it's not even close.
Yeah. You mentioned real quickly back to that season in 2004, some offense, some injuries. You guys had, I think Coach Ferentz mentioned it probably three times a year when we were there. He would always talk about Sam Brownlee, and he was a crucial part to a team that you played on and wasn't supposed to be the guy. What was it about you guys that year that were just able to make a situation like that work and continue to fight through? What was it about those teams? Because you always hear about 02, 03, 04. Those were the teams, right? They had it going. As Coach Ferentz would say, they had it humming. And what was special about those teams just as a whole?
Well, I think those teams, like you said, 02, 03, 04, they were, you know, there was good senior leadership, because you know how it is there at Iowa. It's all about the seniors and what they bring and, you know, the tone that they set. So they were, you know, they were blessed to have those kind of players and young players on and off the field. You know, they were just senior veteran heavy. Because that's all it was at the point. Everyone kind of you can go on that, but that's really, I think, where when you start to really that, you know, the senior leaders, but the defense every year was damn good. You know, the special teams was always at the top of the charts in the league. Like, so, you know, you win, you know how it is, offense, defense, special teams, you win two of the three, especially consistently, you're going to consistently be winning. You know, it's not like we were lighting the world on fire. I mean, we were just finding ways to win. Like, Sam Brownlee's a great example. I mean, he's another old roommate, right? Emmitsburg, Iowa. So, the guy, I mean, shit, he's got to just jump in and play running back in the Big Ten. And somehow he's finding a way to get 4 yards of carry. Like, are you shitting me? And then, you know, throw him in the against LSU. He gets popped by a linebacker. And he just kind of spins off, you know, fights for another yard. But yeah, you know how it is. It's the same old Iowa teams. It's the same. To me, it's been the most consistent program in the last 2 decades. And it's to me, and this is what I tell people, you know, because, you know, I'd go around and talk to these coaches, and, you know, and they're like, tell me, like, how the fuck does Iowa do this? And I said, well, you know, they got three things going for them that most programs don't in the country or in the world. you know, one, they got Coach Ferentz, who's a great leader, just a phenomenal leader, does a great job. But two, you got the farmer's mentality. And then three, you got the wrestling mentality. And I said, man, these fucking kids are wrestling and shit. Like, as soon as they can start walking up there and they play football, they're farmers. So, like, and I lived with, like I said, like, you know, Elgin and Brownlee, like, these guys, I mean, these farmers, these guys are up at like 4 a.m. every morning, making breakfast and going to work. You know, I'm coming from Texas. Hell, I'm like, these fucking people are crazy. Like, I'm at least sleeping in and watching my Price is Right at 10 o'clock. Like, and then I'll start at about 11 o'clock, guys. And then we can get this shit going. But please give me until 11, man. I got to watch Bob Barker. But really, though, like, that's – but, you know, and y'all know how it is, the farming mentality and the wrestling mentality. And then you put those, you know, in like a frame of about, you know, 6'3", 6'5", pretty athletic. Well, man, that's a deadly human being. Man. Damn good prospect of playing football right there in your hands. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yep.
And it's Iowa, and so everything is a mindset. I mean, like, working out to me was like almost playing in a game. Like, I never worked out till I got to Iowa. Like, I never worked out. And then you got to go into these workouts with, like, shit, you're about to, like, practice or something. I'm like, man, we're just working out. Like, no, like, this is serious shit. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we're just moving weights. But then you learn real quick, like, oh, yeah, you got to get your shit together. This is real deal.
Was that a tough transition for you?
Oh, yeah. Dude, just so much of it was different. Everything was different. I mean, I'm from South Texas. Like, you kidding me? And, like, all we did was just play, you know, 7-on-7 if we weren't practicing. Like, we didn't work out. Like,
how sore were you doing? How?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look, put it this way. I never even got to the point where I could get in the cold tub. I'm like, fuck that. Like, I am not doing it. Like, no. And I still don't do that. I mean, I don't do the cold tub, but... No, that shit was just ridiculous to me. I'm like, there's only one thing I like cold, and that's my beer. Like, I don't like anything else that cold. Yeah.
Incredible. When I say the name Bob Sanders, what comes to mind?
The best football player I've ever seen or played with in my entire life.
Oh, yeah.
Coach Ferentz would talk about him on his own level and say that he literally was – a singular reason. You could point to him and say he actually shaped the Iowa program by himself, like almost in his own individual way, in a way that most players aren't able to do. Do you remember anything? I mean, they talk about how he would just go absolutely balls to the wall 100% of the time. There was no, you know, there was no levels to his game. It was either 100% or he wasn't. It was 0 or 100 for him. Is that pretty accurate?
Absolutely. And that's how I tried to play, you know. But, you know, it's okay to do it as a safety, but not as a quarterback. I mean, that's kind of how I have walked away from it. But to me, that's the only way you play the game. And so when I saw him, because I grew up learning to play the game like that. Like, and so when I got to Iowa my freshman year and got to see him, I said, fuck yeah, like, that's how we should be practicing. Like, yeah, like, all of us, you know. And they look at me like I had a third arm growing out of my chest. Like, I'm like, man, like, no, like, this is the shit right here. Because you're right. I mean, he would go 100%. He'd go 100. He'd do the same speed and walkthrough, you know, as in team. And you know how walkthrough is there. Like, but that's how, shit, that's how I saw it, too. And that's why I say, man, I've played football for about 26 years, and I've seen a lot of ball, bro. Like, he is the ultimate, pound for pound, the best football player. I'll tell you the top three best football players I ever played with are all Hawkeyes. Bob Sanders, Chad Greenway, and Jonathan Babineau. Those are the top three football players I've ever played with in my life, hands down.
Bad dudes there. Where does Bob Sanders rank on the hardest hitters list of all time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, he's up there because he would just, you know, he would just run through you.
He ended his NFL career because he was not willing to let off the gas.
Exactly, because you got to think about it. You already said it like 5 minutes ago, is 100 to 0. He only knew one speed. And I can tell you from experience, from a, you know, being able to not being able to do your job at the level that you know you can do it, that's when you're like, no, I can't do it anymore. Fucking, I'm done. Like, I know exactly what that means. I've been there. Like, you put it this way: you go from a wild animal to a pet.
That's a good
mentally,
way to put it.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how it is, basically. Because yeah. You can't do what you've always been able to do, which is put you at the level that you think you are, and other people that you think you think are, or whatever. Like, yeah. But as soon as that drops, even just a half speed, no, can't do it anymore. I only know one speed.
100%. And actually, that's a good segue. I did a little bit of research, and I found that back when you were, I don't even think you were in high school yet, your dad actually took you to a game, and you saw Drew Brees play in high school. Did you model your game after him, or who did you, as a quarterback, try and emulate or try and take things from as you came up? Because Drew Brees is a pretty good place to start, and similar stature. I mean, just the way you guys kind of played is similar, and he's another guy that goes 100 all the time. So I wonder if he had a big influence on you, or if there were other people that meant a lot in your development.
There was a lot of people that meant a lot, but he was always the top of my list. So my dad's team was playing, they played Galveston Ball. They lost to him in a playoff game. And then like the next week, Galveston Ball was playing Austin Westlake in the playoffs. And so he's like, hey, you want to go to the game? I said, hell yeah. So, and I was only 10 years old, and this was still in the Astrodome at the time. And yeah, so they got to play each other. And so I got to see. And here's the thing. I mean, I was only 10 years old, but I had already been on the sidelines since I was like 6.
Right.
You know, so I've already been watching, and so I already knew what I was doing.
That's awesome.
All these guys that were playing, they were really good players. But then, you know, quarterbacks, you know, and when you think about quarterbacks, especially at that age back then, and then, you know, in Houston, there's a lot of black quarterbacks, and the black quarterbacks were the better athletes, you know. Mm-hmm. They just were, you know. And but then, like, okay, so we get to, you know, they usually, the black quarterbacks were the better runners. And my thing growing up was I wanted to be the fastest person on the planet, because I always felt like if I was the fastest person on the planet, no one could argue that I'm the best. You know what I mean? So, like, that's how I always felt running. I always wanted the fastest. So I always liked the running quarterbacks. I used to love watching Nebraska and all that shit. But, you know, my dad threw the ball all the time, and so it was actually kind of funny. But Jermaine, Brian Johnson, L. Roberson, I mean, these were all, like, big starters and stuff. I mean, they got their own histories and stuff. But we watch this game, and there's this just white quarterback on the Austin Westlake team just running all over the place. And I'm like, damn, who's this white guy? Like, just running all over the place. My dad said, yeah, he's only a sophomore. And I said, what? This dude, because the team that they were playing that beat my dad's team had a senior quarterback, Jermaine, who went to Baylor, but he was just he wasn't really much of a runner. Like, he was a pure pop. He was like a Doug Williams, big guy, big arm. He could just, you know, throw the hell out of that damn ball. And so, and he was a senior, and he was all state and all this and all that. And I'm like, and my dad's team put up like, I think like 40 points on Galveston. They just couldn't stop him because they were just loaded. And but then Austin plays him, Westlake plays him, and then, yeah, I saw him play. And I said, well, shit, I don't know who that guy is, but he's my favorite quarterback now. And then, damn, you know, I didn't know who he was at the time. I mean, he's only a sophomore quarterback, but shit, I didn't know who he was until 4 years later when he was a sophomore at Purdue in 1998, I believe. And then I said, oh, okay, that's him. And then I was like, yeah, his name's Drew. And, oh, he's only – you know, 5'11", 6 foot. So that's exactly what I did. I tried to do everything that he did. And we used to go up to these Purdue camps and shit like that. So I'd work with him and their coach. So I got, like, my throwing motion. I got all this stuff from them and everything. And so I wanted to go to Purdue really bad. And then when I ended up at Iowa, I said, I'm going to – every time we play Purdue, that's going to be my best games. And, like, fuck, I think my three best games are against Purdue, to be honest with you, bro.
That's awesome.
It's crazy.
I went to those exact same Purdue quarterback camps, Drew, because when I was growing up, I thought I was going to be a quarterback.
There you go. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh, I really do.
Yeah, there you go.
Drake and, yeah, your guys' careers turned out slightly different. Drew actually became a quarterback, and you, Drake, you just ended up being the fullback. You run your head into stuff.
Hey, man.
I'm sure he wakes up every day feeling just fine.
I don't think he does. Drew, also in the research, I didn't know this. You actually, all of this could have almost not been something, right? General managers ask questions to find the right players, like, do they have ice in their veins? When you're hiring, you can use Indeed assessments to make sure you find the right candidates with the skills you need. Don't just hope your perfect candidate will find you. Indeed's hiring tools help you cut through the noise to hire faster and smarter. In fact, Indeed Instant Match provides a list of quality candidates whose resumes are on Indeed the moment you post a sponsored job. And with Indeed assessments, choose from 135 skills tests to help make sure you're finding applications from people with skills you need. Get started right now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
You almost weren't the Hawk. You were committed to you were committed to Texas A&M, and you actually, your original plan was to play both football and baseball there. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, that was the original plan, was to play both. I really wanted to play both, and, you know, it played out to where it didn't play both. But yeah, if the A&M football coach doesn't get fired, I had never gone to Iowa. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to leave Texas, really. Definitely didn't want to go north of the Red River. Like, if anything, go east or west. Like,
you don't like north. The Iowa snow?
I'll tell you what, I wanted to transfer so fast after that first fall at Iowa, but if it wasn't for the football, like, that's what it was the football. I'm like, no, but I really like it here. But I love the people there. Like, to me, Iowans are just, and my dad, you know, he's Iowan. And it just, Iowa people are just awesome. I love Iowa people. So it was always fun. I enjoyed, you know, the friends and the teammates and then, you know, classmates and all that stuff. That was always cool. Like, but yeah, it was just like, man, this is just too fucking cold. Like, and I don't mind cold. But not for, like, 3 or 4 months. Like, no. Hell no. You know, maybe a month.
Were you pretty good at baseball?
Yeah, man. I thought I was pretty good. You know?
Of course.
I mean, people still say, like, dude, you should have gotten baseball. But I loved football. There was nothing going to take me away from football unless I just literally couldn't do it. So that was kind of, you know, and, you know, I mean, and y'all know how it is, you know, like, he wanted to be a quarterback, right? Like, I wanted to play quarterback at, like, a major university, and just, I fell in love with Iowa on my visit and just everything about it and the people, and it was just, and Coach Ferentz, you know, and it was just like, and then, like, I got to see him practice. They were getting ready to play in the Orange Bowl against USC, so I got to practice. So I got to see all the quarterbacks. I got to evaluate and see them. And, you know, my hot head, I was like, dude, if this guy's up for the Heisman, like, I'll be starting next year. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like how I thought. Like, sorry, but, you know, but it was great. No, and wouldn't change it. Absolutely not. Wouldn't change anything.
That's incredible. You played with others. You mentioned Greenway. We had him on the podcast for episode 100. And he obviously didn't disappoint. What do you remember about Chad? And then you also played with guys like Roth and Yonda. I mean, when you start to go through the people that were on the people that were your teammates, you start to talk about legends.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, because like I said, I mean, and then shit, you could even say Kading and Gallery.
I'm glad you threw Kading in there. The specialists need the love.
Oh, dude, are you kidding me? I used to hold too and everything. My best friends growing up are always like the kickers and stuff, you know, like,
let's go.
Oh, absolutely. You got to take care of those guys. They fucking win you games. Special teams wins games now. That's why I kept talking about special teams bringing up in 04 because they were so damn good. Like, they kept us in games and scored a lot of points, actually. So, yeah, fuck yes. The special teams is a legit third of the game now. I mean, and thing about special teams, it's momentum. It's all momentum and heart. That's all it is. And they have the opportunity to change momentum of a game
You have no idea how much you just made Kluber's day. Drew Tate just told him how important he was on his own podcast. I can't believe you just gave this guy what he wanted.
Hey, chalk it up for the good guys.
Hey,
come on
good,
now.
Good guys. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm not going to say it. Drew said it. Going back to the catch, by the way, Drake, you said you were at a friend's house. It's the first time I ever cried over sports. I was very sad. LSU had just taken the lead, and the game was slipping out of reach. And I distinctly remember I was in my uncle's basement. It was like a family. I think we might have been doing like a late Christmas. And
are you in that same room that you're in now at that time? Like, or what's going on there? You like in a closet or something?
No. The closet. I'm in my office right now.
Okay.
This is not. Yeah. But so I'm getting clowned. So I'm sitting there. We're 9 years old, and I start crying because the Hawks are gonna lose. And then you launch this piss missile into space, and it comes down into Holloway's hands. And I ran around the house screaming for 5 minutes straight. It was the most incredible thing that a fourth grader could go through.
Well, good. Hey, I aim to please, so I'm glad to hear that.
Well, you made a lot of Hawkeye fans happy that day.
There we go.
How many years did you play with Matt Roth?
Two.
And okay, now let me ask you a story.
Oh, it's probably true. I can tell you that right now.
Okay, I hear a legend of Matt Roth that he used to leave his keys in either his moped or his car to try and get it stolen so that he could chase the person down because he was looking for violence.
I believe that 100%. I don't – that makes sense. Hearing that, to be honest with you, that makes a lot of sense. I'll tell you this though. I can elaborate on leaving keys in the car. So like he would just leave his keys in the car and just leave it running and just walk away. And they'd be in the meetings and they'd come to the meeting and say, "Hey, Matt, your car is running in the parking lot," you know, and he'd say, "Oh shit, not again," you know. Like, wait a minute, how do you walk away from your car running in the parking lot, you know? I mean, but you want to hear the craziest Matt Roth story? Well, I mean, there's a couple.
Yes, I very much want to hear the craziest Matt Roth story.
Okay, well, the craziest Matt Roth story is that, like, you know, because he was a wrestler, and he also had a brother, and I guess his brother was wired up about the same way. And, like, whenever they would go out in Iowa City and get into fights with people, they would just beat everyone up at the bar. They'd beat up all the bouncers. And then when there was no one else to beat up, they'd just start fighting each other. There you go.
I don't get it. I mean, everybody that has a story about Matt Roth, it's always like that. Like, how is someone built like that? Built different, like Matt Roth was built different.
And somehow all these people that are built different find their way to Iowa City. It blows me away. This little village, like just a little west of the Mississippi. I don't get it.
It's nuts.
Speaking of Iowa City, where was the go-to spot to hang out back in the day?
Oh, man, we always went to the Column. There was like McInerney's. You know, the Vine, stuff like that.
No stuff.
Yeah, where else? There's the Scummit. We didn't go to the Scummit. It was all of the sororities and fraternities. They didn't like the athletes. So, hey, we said, okay, you stay on your turf. We'll stay on ours. You don't come in ours either. So they were pretty cool about it. You know, we respected each other's space.
That's good because later on – there was an amount of disrespect to the point where one of the fullbacks stole a keg out of one of the fraternity houses.
Well, damn, yeah, they should do that. Oh, shit, any of those guys could walk in there and take whatever they wanted. And they could do much.
This guy can do what he wanted in a fraternity for sure.
That's great.
What do you have any specific memories about just going through the shit early on in your career, just trying to figure out how to be a Division I football player and also be a student? stuff that comes to mind for me was like getting on the moped when it's 12 degrees outside and driving over to the complex, or any memories from that old complex that you guys were in?
Well, no, but I think you said it. The football part to me was always the easiest part. Like, playing football to me was always just, it came natural. Like, you know, the football part, like I said, that was an entity of its own. I'll be fine there. Not even worried about that. And my thing was, going to fucking class and passing these classes. Like, I mean, and like, you know, where I went to high school, shit, our senior research paper, it was 3 pages handwritten. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't care about that shit. They were just like, hey, as long as you know, you turn in weekly assignments, hey, we pass you. Great. Okay. So I was like, oh, this is great. And you know how I was. It's a hell of an institution when it comes to academics. And, but I graduated in 4.5 years. I mean, it was like, you know, in the learning center hours and shit like that. That's really what pissed me off. And usually, you know, I it's just a natural instinct, you know, for people to tell me to do something that I don't want to do. I kind of, I just kind of like, wait a minute now, I don't want to do that, you know? Like, and they're like, yeah, you gotta go, yeah, you know, when you gotta go.
I was gonna do it, then you told me to do it, now I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, you know, and now it's like, no, definitely now I don't want to do it. You know, those fucking learning center, and you gotta go, you tell me I go to this fucking little building for 8 hours this week, so I'm gonna sit there and stare at the same screen that I'm gonna be doing? Like, no, like, I'm not doing that. Like, you shit me, like. No,
I love it.
Like,
Drew Tate cheating on the LC and the 8-hour rule. I love it.
Y'all didn't have Netflix to watch in the LC back then.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, it was basically the only thing there were just the female athletes. And so you're like, hey
honestly,
but they want to study. Like,
honestly, though, there have always been some very good-looking female athletes on campus. And
oh, hell yeah.
The LC was a tremendous place.
But, yeah, y'all know exactly what I'm talking about, that damn learning center. Like, it was like basically going into, like, an AA meeting, you know, like, damn near. Like, no, I don't want to go there. Like, I got nothing in common with you people. Just let me do my thing. I'll be fine. Like,
did the strength staff and Coach Doyle want you to gain weight? Or how did that go when you were there? Did you guys have to drink those nasty applesauce protein shakes?
All the time, yeah. And you know how it is. It's always about gaining weight. And, I mean, and me, we go from Nathan Chandler to Drew Tate. Nathan Chandler is literally twice the man that Drew Tate is. He's fucking damn near a foot taller, and he's like 80 pounds heavier. Like, it was so, you know. And then I remember getting there and seeing, like, Mo Brown. Man, when I first saw Mo Brown, they said, yeah, he's a receiver. I said, what? Like, he looked like a DN, literally. Like, and then Fred Russell, you see him, and you're like, what? Like, look at this guy. Like, you know, I don't know, 5'5", but the most jacked up dude. And then there's Bob Sanders, who's an inch taller than him, who's even more jacked up than him. You're like, what the fuck is going on here? And then there's Robert Gallery on the other
side. Dude, I had the exact...
You know, like, what?
I had the exact same experience. Walking in, seeing Brandon Sheriff, I was like, who in the fuck made this human? I had a locker right next to him, and I just stared at him all the time, incessantly. Like, how did God make you this way?
Yep, exactly. That's exactly how it was. Yeah, exactly how it was. And so, dude, I think my freshman year, I was like 160 pounds, maybe 165 pounds, you know? And then, damn, I'm the backup, you know? Like, so I go, you know, from a true freshman right into the backup, number two. So you're like, whoa, like, I'm fresh off the boat. Like, I mean, he hasn't, you know, I'm still trying to figure out where the fuck the library is, you know? But, damn. Because, you know, Iowa, like, it was, especially back then, it was all senior heavy, senior heavy, senior heavy, senior heavy, you know? And so, you know, freshmen didn't play back then. They really didn't.
Yeah. I'm curious, you had such a long career in football. It's not easy to do. You played in the CFL. I'd love to hear about your post-Iowa career and what you attribute your longevity to and what it was like playing in the Canadian Football League for so long. What was that like?
Man, playing in the – there's not a tent big enough for that circus. But I say that in a laughter way, like, I mean, it's football, and it's fun, but, I mean, it's just so far out there. You're like, what? I think, like, Pat McAfee called it State Fair football, and that's exactly what it is. It's so funny. But the people, I mean, it's a great game. They've had it forever. What I love about it, it's an offensive game, and the creativity that you can have with the motions and just kind of like with the rules, how the rules are. Like, I mean, it's a fun game. It really is. And I hope they get to play because they might not. They didn't play last year. And if they don't play this year, I think the league's going to fold. But so I'm hoping they, that these vaccines get going, they get playing. But I'll tell you what, you know, in the there's a saying, hey, if you've played long enough, you'll experience just about everything. You know, you coach long enough, you see everything. And it's true. I mean, I was able to play for a long time. So I really got to see a lot of just how just in a 12-month period things change. And so that, you know, you're able to, you know, it molds and shapes you, right? And so just, you know, and even at I and see, I was blessed at Iowa that, you know, when you go to college, and y'all know how it is, I mean, you're guaranteed, you know, what, play four, you get 5 years to play four or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I mean? So, but it's like a, you know, it's like a, I sign you, okay, boom, this is a commitment. But, man, pro ball is a fucking, it is a one-season lifeline. That's all pro ball is, you know, unless you're like Drew Brees and Rodgers and Brady, you know, like guy Mahomes, those right. guys, like, that's a little different, you know, but they're exceptions, right? And so, but for everyone else, nah, you're on a one-year deal. And coaches, too, you know, I'm coaching now, so you get to see it through that. I've been able to coach pro ball, and so, like, it's just, it's crazy. Like, to me, the highest, purest form of the sport is Division I football, FBS. But then, to me, the purest form of the sport is high school. So, because as soon as you start getting paid to play football, everything that you can have known about football, you can just put it all, like, in a little piece of paper, wrap it up, and throw away. I mean, because it doesn't matter about that shit. All it matters is about producing on game day. That's literally all pro ball is. Because it's not really pro football. It's the entertainment business.
Yep.
You know, and that's a completely different – it's just – it's not football. Yes, you're playing football, but it's entertainment business now.
Yep.
That's how it is, man. It's crazy. And, yeah, I was blessed. I was able to play for a while. Got to have great experience. I got to see a whole nother country, that whole aspect. I mean, Canada's a beautiful, beautiful country. Beautiful country, beautiful people, beautiful people. There's not many fat people in Canada. Like, there just isn't. Like, food is really expensive there. So, like, I mean, damn, unless you got a lot of money, like, you ain't eating much. But, like, they're very, you know, fit. They live for life. You know, work to them is just kind of, they just do it. Like, you know, they got the universal healthcare system. They, you know, like Walmart closes at 10 o'clock. Like, are you shitting me? Walmart? Like, damn, you know, like, fucking it's 11 o'clock and I need shit. I can't go to Walmart? Like, you're shitting me. Like, yeah, we're 3 o'clock in the morning. Can't go to Walmart. Like, but see, so that's what I'm saying. You know, they live for quality of life and, you know, and it's not competitive. Like, you know, like put it this way, man. We had a playoff game one time. My last year playing in Ottawa, 2017, we had a home playoff game. And we're playing on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday's that day three. So we go out Friday, you know, for day three. Well, shit, we go out, the field's covered in fucking snow. We're like, damn, are y'all not going to go, you know, so we go over to the maintenance guys. And I'm like, hey, man, like, are y'all not going to fucking plow or something so we can practice? They're like, oh, no, man, it's supposed to snow tomorrow, today and tomorrow. And so we'll just do it right before the game. And I'm thinking, like, you, like, this, so I was like, all right, so – that's when I was kind of like, I'm kind of over this shit. But, you know, so I mean, think about that, right? Like, are you shitting me? Like, I mean, every, you know, it just wouldn't happen, you know, here. And, you know, especially on like a playoff game or something like that. I mean, even like all your practice fields are getting plowed and stuff. Like, so, you know, there's that. So, but
you mentioned
good experience.
You mentioned pro ball being a business and entertainment. I'm curious what your thoughts are on the ever-developing situation with the NCAA and probably the inevitability of athletes getting paid or at least getting to make money off their name and their image. What do you think about
that? Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. That's funny you bring that up because I was thinking about that. And I'll go on record. No, college athletes should not be paid off their name or anything. And I say that and I really mean that because, yes – The university and all these people, yes, but you are a child still. You are still in the system that you entered when you were 5 years old. So where do you draw the fucking line? You know what I mean? Like, no, you're still in the education system. Like, you have not, you're, until you have, you know, done your chores and proven on paper that you can do your fucking chores, you know, like, yes, but that's the system. You entered it when you were 5 years old. It's higher education, yes, but I mean, the whole thing is a conspiracy anyways, you know, student loans and college education, like, especially now where everything's online, like, no one gives a shit about that anymore. So
bring up a really good point there.
Right. So, but that's my thing is like, what, like, where do you draw the line? But I, in my opinion, no, you are still a student athlete. You're not a professional. You are not a professional. You don't know what the professional's life's like because you've never been in the professional life. Again, you've been in the same system since you've been 5 years old when you started going to kindergarten. So until you get out of that, then you can get paid. That's my opinion about it.
Love it.
Mic drop.
Like, yeah. He's made a pretty good point, and I was all for athletes getting paid because I just hated how lucrative it was.
I agree.
Everybody
yes.
else at the top.
Absolutely. I agree. I think it's fucked up that athletes don't get paid, but then, okay, how do you deviate? Where do you draw the line? Like, you know, because I can tell you this, as soon as you start getting paid, it changes the fucking game. Like I said, everything you've learned about the game when you started playing when you were 6 years old or whatever, as soon as you start getting paid, you can throw that away. So you don't want that culture, environment, atmosphere in a college locker room on a college campus. I'm telling you that right now. That is poison. That is what same rat fucking poison. That's what it is. And I wouldn't. That's something I would not go. It's one of those things where you're best just turning and walking away. You don't want to go fuck with that.
That's actually a point I never thought about was the toxic environment it could create amongst.
Oh, you have no idea because the game will become a job, and as soon as it becomes a job, it ain't a game no more. And these are still kids. It's a game. It's a game. They're representing their college institution.
It's a good point. I have one more question, and maybe Drake or Kevin has something else. Looking back now, as you came into Iowa 2002. You're starting
– no, 2003.
2003, you're the starting quarterback for the Iowa Hawkeyes as a young guy, as a sophomore.
Yeah, in 04,
What would you tell yourself now? What advice did 19-year-old, 20-year-old Drew Tate need back then?
Well, and, you know, that's a really good question. Because you got to understand, I was living my dream – at 18, 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how that dream was. I mean, you said you cried, right? Like when you were 10. So imagine living your dream. I wanted to live it to the fullest. And I already kind of have that personality, you know, like, so shit, really? I would say, hey, don't get caught up on one girl. They're all the same damn near. That'd be number one. And number two is be a better leader, I guess, in the facility, like, because that's the other thing, right, is like, I mean, I was living my dream at 18, 19 years old, so I had never lived any other life, so, you know, I thought it was crazy that people were, like, just, like, in awe of me, and so I thought that was weird, because I was, you know, I was kind of taught never really to be in awe of another man, like, you can do anything any other man can do, right, like, mm-hmm. So, well, then, yeah, right, so, like, and, but that's what I didn't understand the level. Well, fuck, it had never happened at Iowa. You know, there had never been a sophomore quarterback probably make the biggest play in the school's history in football. So, like, that was – no one really had the answer for that and how to deal with that.
Yep.
Like, because that was life-changing. Because, I mean, like, dude, I still had two more years to play. And I still – and I had to, you know – so that – the bar was set, right? So that would have been it probably to tell myself is, hey, okay – this just happened. Understand where this bar is at. And, like, don't just look at it. Like, really fucking, like, understand and observe it. Like, learn about it. And just learn the people. Because then, you know how it is in football. I mean, one day they want to carry you on the field. The next day they want to boo you. So, you know, and understand that opinions really, you know, people's – even actions, you know, they're still human at the end of the day. So, you know, and they all like winners, you know, and, you know, just stuff like that. Right.
Yep.
Cause that's what, that was like a, you know, like you got to understand people and just kind of how it works. Cause I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm coming up from Texas and I thought, hell, I was just the toughest shit on the block. And then like, you know, I wasn't prepared for all that, like emotionally and mentally.
Yep.
Like I always said, the football part to me was always easy and fun. That was like, I would never even thought about that. Like that was just like, all right, who are we playing next? All right, fuck it. Here we go. Like, but it was just the stuff during the week, you know? And that was my thing. Like I couldn't stay in the dorm. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I mean, I'm getting knocks on my door all night, all day. Like, you shit me. And then you want me to, you know, get 8 hours of sleep. Like, how am I going to do that? You know?
100%. Kevin, Drake, anything for the man?
I just feel like me and Drew are cut from a very similar cloth.
There yeah. you go. I dig it.
I would say that's pretty correct. Kevin, anything?
Yeah, I have one question. I don't know if we ever talked about this before in the podcast, but in the Iowa locker room, there's a lion that gets passed around.
Yeah,
I was about to say, I think your number was like one of the first numbers on this thing. Is that right?
Yeah. That was Matt Roth had passed it down to me.
Yes, sir. Talk to the fans about the line.
Well, I don't really – what I know is I think he got it from Jamaica or some island somewhere. I don't know. But it was a badass, like, wood-chipped and carved lion. I mean, this thing was, like – it's pretty big, you know? I mean, it was
–
yeah. Yeah, it was solid. I mean, it wasn't like the Floyd of Rosedale solid or that size. But, I mean, damn, I mean, it – you know, it was a good-sized deal. And Matt and he always kept it on top of his locker, you know, in those old locker rooms there. And I said, I always liked it. And then so shit, you know, he was training for his pro day. You know how it is, like they would always keep the seniors there. They would train the seniors for pro day for free and keep them there. And they get to work out, which is great. And Ross locker was across from mine, so we were always there. And so I was like, fuck man, I want like you taking that with you or what? I want. And so like one day I showed up, it was in front of my locker with it carved and stuff. And I tried to, and then I was going to pass it down to Alex Canellis. So here's a true story. This is pretty fucked up. I mean, I think this is what happened. I don't really know because I never saw it again. So I had it on my locker, right? You know, and all that shit. So I was going to pass it down to Alex Canellis because I loved Alex Canellis and he's just, you know, great guy. But then shit, somehow, some way they said Mitch King stole it and then put it on his locker or something. So
I
cannot confirm or deny that, but that's what I heard. So
yeah, and once Mitch was getting it, he probably wasn't giving it back to anybody. So
that sounds about right.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, that thing's been passed down for shit 15 years now.
Yeah,
they still got it going.
Yep, it's still going. There.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. I mean, God, I wish I could really tell you everything about that, but I'd have to charge you $1,000. And then I'd be putting my name out there.
That line has seen some shit now, huh?
That's all right. Well, Drew, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time out of your night. I know it's
no,
nice.
I knew about you guys, like, and so that was cool, like, and then, yeah, I got the message or something, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that's right on. That'd be cool.
We thoroughly, I think I can speak for all three of us, we thoroughly enjoyed our time with you, and I think the Hawk fans that listen to this will as well.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Love the Hawk fans. Go Hawks. Always rooting for the good guys. It's just, I love it. I love the consistency and the respect. And then, I mean, it's easy. Like, you guys, I don't know where y'all live, you know, but, like, you know, just all over the country and even in Canada, I mean, just how respected that Tiger Hawk is, it's makes you proud.
Absolutely. Episode 200, listeners of the podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it.
This 200 was an absolute treat.
200 was there a treat, and the next 100 hopefully will be as well. Drew Tate, everybody. Episode 200. We'll be back again next time. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo. We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams. Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today. So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram, too.